Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
So, Todd, I was riding on the bus this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you do.
As I do, going to work. And I was there reading my book.
What's your book about?
It's about audiobooks.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It's very meta. And somebody tapped me on my shoulder, and I looked around, and there was this little grandma that was there. And she's like, "Hey, Sonny, would you like... like some nuts? I've got some hazelnuts and some almonds." And I'm like, "Of course."
So, very nice of her.
So it was very, very sweet. And so I was munching on those. And a few minutes later, she tapped on my shoulder again, and she's like, would you like some more nuts?" And I'm like, "Oh, sure." And she gave me another little handful of nuts and she went back with her husband and continued on her path, whatever she was doing. And a few minutes later, she tapped on my shoulder again, and she's like, "Would you like some more nuts?" I'm like, "Well, yes, but why don't you eat them yourself?" She's like, "Well, me and my husband, we don't have any teeth." I said, "Well, why do you buy these then?" "Well, we like the chocolate that's on the outside." That's all I got.
Wow, that was a long walk for a joke.
And not really
a joke, some might argue. I had time to go get my Unipiper slide whistle in case the joke ended up turning out well. It didn't, though, I didn't use it.
Perfect.
How's
it going?
Good. Welcome to another episode. I got to move my bag here. Of the Mark and Todd Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Horkhoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well.
Good. So, not to complain about my computer operating system upgrade again, but ever since I did that, it gives me these irritating, nagging warning or like reminders, like, "You haven't backed up in this, and you need to do this."
Right.
Get off my back. Ah, so welcome to another episode, like I said, of the Mark and Todd Cast. We have some, I'm all discombobulated, usually because we usually record on Sunday afternoons. Now it's Monday night.
And we usually have a joke that makes you
laugh. And we usually have a joke to get into the show of some sort. And you're right, I usually do laugh about it. But there is something, actually, I sent you a picture earlier this week of me wearing your old poopy suit.
Oh, yes, yes.
And
yes.
So I had gotten that, and for those of you, for people who don't know Mark, what is a poopy suit?
What's a poopy suit? So it's a naval military outfit. And on the submarine, that was our uniform. It's very similar to what like an auto mechanic would wear. Mm-hmm. So they're
big coveralls.
Navy blue coveralls.
With a zipper up the front.
Yeah, and it's actually a double-ended zipper. You can zip it up or down.
Oh, okay.
For convenience, for relieving oneself.
For relieving oneself.
And so you wear a belt with it, and that's the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, so for some reason, and I forget why, but I have your old... poopy suit from your submarine when you were on the submarine.
Yeah, and I remember after getting out of the Navy, I used them for like all the maintenance things around the house, and so it's got paint on it and everything.
Yeah, and which is what I use it for a long time for painting and stuff. And so I was mashing blackberries into blackberry juice, which is just this horrendous mess. And so I put on your poopy suit, and I asked you about the name poopy suit,
and no one knows
because you were like, "Oh, whatever." I thought maybe you weren't invested in finding the answer, but whatever.
I looked it up before, and it's
there is no reason it's called. And poopy suits in different arenas like the Navy or the Air Force or whatever, they all have their own version of the poopy suit. And so like some of them were designed for flotation. When you jumped into the water, they would collect the air inside or whatever and help you float and stuff like that. And then the Air Force had a different one for pilots to wear their thing. And then I'd also ask you if the name was related to the poop deck, which I know is another ship term. Is it, it's not a military term, like just for military boats. It's just a boating term, correct?
Right. Yeah. And we didn't have a poop deck on the submarine.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I looked into that, and there's no like real, other than it was like the deck that was the highest deck. And so I wonder if it was like a fear inducing thing, but that's just that like none of it added up. So, yeah, still
they're all named after General John
General
Poop.
Poopy. Well, it's like Admiral Burnside is why we have the name Sideburns, because he had those crazy hue and he was known for those big, huge things. And we just got the name flipped around. And also Hooker was the name of a general in the Civil War that was known for his courting of the women. And so they would always be called as hookers women or hookers girls, and eventually just hookers. So there's your history lesson for today.
Nice.
But I also accidentally, like if you read, and you don't read as much Facebook as I do, but you'll see articles that, you know, are warning against impending doom, or this is happening, or this is happening. And over the weekend, I accidentally became, I think I am now a social justice warrior. I am an SJW. I didn't mean to.
I read the message from you talking about this situation,
right,
and I laughed. It was kind of amazing. So tell us the story.
So I have a friend, Joni DeRoshi, that I've known for a long, long time. And she works at a place called the Northwest Down Syndrome Association. And it's they help put on camps and help families, and like they do all sorts of things for the disabled community. And Joni had called me and said, I'm doing this little class thing for there's a summer camp, and every night they have some, you know, a different activity or whatever. And so a while ago, I used to make my own T-shirts I would make different stencils and then make my own T-shirts out of it. And I had done that once with her as a video project that she was doing, blah, blah, blah. So she asked if I wanted to do that. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, that would be really cool. And so we kind of were planning it, and then I get the invitation in my inbox, like the official one, and it was for the, now I don't have it anymore, but it was the social justice something class or something like that. And like, oh my gosh, the SJWs, they got me. I wasn't looking.
You're one of them now.
I was.
That's awesome.
I
welcome to Portland.
First, they came for the someones, and then nobody fought
down
for me.
Down with
or
protests.
Whatever. So yeah, and it ended up being the little. So the class was like 2 hours long, and Joni put together this thing of symbols of resistance. So it was this interesting thing about how symbols like the peace symbol or like the Guy Fawkes masks, how they come about, and then how they're used by different, you know, communities to promote change and stuff like that. And then we did something. So there's a class, maybe about 15 kids of varying abilities and stuff like that. And the plan was for the class, the group that has, and they spent all week together. It's like an overnight camp. And so it was the last night of camp. And so it was to make a symbol that reflected who they were as a group. And then not only do that as a group of 13 people, but it needed to be easy enough that you can make a stencil out of it and then put it on a T-shirt. And I was like, I work in advertising and marketing. Getting a group of 13 people to do anything, A, is impossible. Anything creative is impossible. Like,
it was just setting up for failure. Most mediocre, you know. Yeah.
Right. And then, like, can you make a stencil out of it? Like, so I'm just expecting, you know, this disaster. And they, dang nabbit, if they did not come up with a symbol that was like, it was a heart with like these people inside, and it was like a great symbol, and it was able to turn into a stencil, and I was blown away that
That's
they were able
awesome.
To do it in like 20 minutes. They had the basis of it and stuff like that. And it was great. So that's how I became a social justice warrior.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome.
So contact me for all your social justice needs. Anyway. Oh, and I also, this is, I was going to show you this on the thing, but I was out VHS hunting for my notebooks today, and I came across, I'll show this on camera. About this a few weeks ago or something that came out. I told the story about how I was with my younger sister-in-law at the time looking for this documentary that I'm holding in my hands called Hands on a Hard Body, and how the lady at Blockbuster misunderstood me and shouted out into the store, "You're looking for Hands on a Hard Boy?" And then I had to correct her to say, "No, Hands on a Hard Body," which does not sound any better with your 14-year-old sister-in-law in tow with you. So I came across that today, and so I had to go, I'm going to add that to our show.
But you had to say it just a little bit louder to make sure that the people who heard the first part were corrected.
Least, right. Brought into my shame spiral with me.
Oh, my word.
Anyway, well, moving on to some news. Well, first, actually, it's not quite our 100th show yet. We're on 94, but we have a first, and that is a correction.
Ah.
We finally got something. It was not our fault.
We probably should have had many corrections.
No, it's the first time. And I think last week I read a story on how it was going to be the brightest meteor shower in recorded human history.
Right.
And AP, actually, the Associated Press, and I imagine they do this every week or maybe are going to start, they talk about the biggest stories that went around the news and whether or not they were factual.
Oh, interesting.
And so there's a couple other stories, which I couldn't believe people actually believed, but that's where we are in life. And then I got to this one, of course, one that got me. So the facts are the Perseid. Did we ever figure out how to say that? Perseid? Perseid?
No.
The Dark Side meteor shower. Won't come close to setting any records. The head of NASA's meteoroid environment office, Bill Cook, said that astronomers are projecting a slighter higher than normal shower rate, but nothing about the brightness. And in fact, the brightness of the moon will wash out the finer of the meteors, but it won't even break last year's record of how many meteors. And I don't remember where I flagged the story, but it wasn't, because usually I check, is it's only coming at least from one place or more people, and that's about all the vetting I do. But so yeah, there was our first. I don't even have a sounder for our first retraction. So there we go. Oh, is this your story coming up here?
Yeah, the OHSU.
Okay. I was like, I don't know. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, so here in Portland, there's a research hospital, a big mainstay hospital here, OHSU.
As seen in Extraordinary Measures,
as
starring
seen
Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser.
I totally forgot that entire movie.
I told you I tried to pirate that movie so I can get screen captures to put to my map that I'm making, and no one is even pirating it. the movie came out in like 2010.
I know. The leechers are, you know, like, eh. So, OHSU scientists successfully modifies DNA of a human embryo. Yeah, so we had an episode not too long ago about CRISPR, the DNA sequencing process that where you can take, say, some target DNA and replace it with some basically a Band-Aid of DNA and modify it.
Right,
so,
CRISPR.
I barely knew her.
So... Shukrat Matilipov of Oregon Health and Science University targeted a gene associated with human disease, surpassing work done in China. So recently they've done some work in China for doing the same thing. The Chinese researchers...
I feel like we look in the Chinese laboratory, it'd be like that scene in Alien 3 where they're walking through and there's all the half-alien, half-human things stuck in the thing.
Yes.
Just the monster intermediate steps of what they're trying to accomplish.
So Chinese researchers have also modified human embryos with CRISPR, but the report said that Matilipov worked on more embryos and had more success. His team avoided altering genes that were not targeted, called off-target effects, or they also did not modify some of the other effect is only modifying some of the targeted DNA, which is called mosaicism.
Okay.
They didn't do either of those. So there's kind of two bad situations. One is like over...
changing too many things.
Changing too many things, and one is not changing enough.
Right.
But they were right on target on all of their things. So in the current experiment, the embryos were not allowed to develop more than a few days, but they were in the lab and modified DNA of
and these are
human
like
embryos.
Fertilized human embryos.
Yes.
I wonder where they get those from. I guess they just
from the movie Gattaca.
From the
this is how it starts. We are there.
Ethan Hawke tried to warn us.
Yeah, he did. Also, India wants to ban self-driving cars.
Although, if you've seen their traffic, I think they can probably, use it.
Nitin Gadkari.
Good grief. This is the week of impossible to pronounce names by Mark Middleton.
India's minister for road transport says, "We will not allow driverless cars in India. I am very clear on this. We won't allow any technology that takes away jobs." Old man shouts at a cloud.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's misguided.
Any technology to take away jobs.
Yeah. Misguided, naive, like.
And that's not even a statement like directed at cars. Like that's a
blanket
statement.
We
won't build factories
right,
or something.
We won't do anything that takes away jobs.
Wow. I was going to say that's like the Amish, but I guess that's the Amish rules. We don't do anything. We won't allow technology that takes time away from
family
and God
right.
and stuff like that or something. I don't know how buttons work into that, but
right.
I forget. Wow.
Buttons?
Yeah, they're not allowed to use, or no, zippers.
Zippers.
Yeah.
Huh.
We'll have to have the Amish on the show someday.
I know some.
That's right.
I'm your connection.
On the show Breaking Amish.
Yes.
A show about Amish people.
Yes.
Wow.
Hashtag Pastor Mark.
What a time to be alive. That's right. Well, if you are in the Portland area or anywhere in the Pacific Northwest this last week, not only have we been having a massive heat wave, but there has been massive smoke cover from these gigantic Canadian forest fires, and Canada has declared a state of emergency and this story is a couple days old even, so that's probably things have changed a little bit, but 138 wildfires broke out. This was on Saturday for a total of 240. There's 1,800 firefighters were trying to tackle the fire, and 260 more were coming from other parts of Canada. This is a little tangential, but I was watching a video of one of those, the water dropping planes.
Yes.
And it wasn't the helicopter with the bag. It was, and I always kind of wondered how they put water back into that. And
it is
impossible because they fly over a lake and they open the bottom and they scoop it up without the plane blowing apart somehow. And it's, that should not work.
It's insane.
That is crazy.
I don't have any idea. It's physics.
But yeah, go see a video because yeah, and it's flying obviously at flying speed so that it does not crash into the water, and it just opens a little hatch.
It's used like capillary action or something, you know, when an object in motion has a lower pressure than static objects. So that I'm sure that they use that principle, the Bernoulli effect, to draw water.
Cause I mean, yeah, not only does it not blow apart the plane, but it doesn't like make it dive nose first into the water.
Right.
It's crazy. So yeah, go watch. I'm sure on YouTube there's tons of them, but I just saw one in specifically that. But anyway, the Canadian wildfires, because of all of the hot air that's been pushed up there that we've been having, it's just fueled all of those hot wildfires. And yeah, it's just been. In fact, I read another article about how Portland's air quality right now is worse than Beijing. And so I was driving over the Markham Bridge today to come here and just looked out over, you know, Waterfront Park and downtown. And it is just still just really gross and smoky and terrible. So
I was wondering the math around fires, forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
When they say this fire is, you know, it is currently 5,500 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... has burned 5,500 acres, or is the active space of
does the burned part count towards the size of the fire?
Right, because I like to deal with 5,500 acres of active fire is very different from 20 acres of active fire that has burnt 5,000.
Right. Or, you know, I would imagine the distinction there would be if they're still trying to put it out,
hot spots
and that probably goes into there's, you know, 1,000 acres of fire, which is 50% contained.
Right.
So that could be the little thing that they add on to that because, right. But I would imagine that anything that is still burning would be considered part of the fire.
Right.
So, but yeah, I'm not sure how that distinction makes, but there have been several fires in Central Washington started by cats. At least two fires in Grant County in the past several weeks, among the many burning throughout the state. A cat caused serious damage in Ephrata after climbing up a power pole and starting a fire, burning several buildings and junk vehicles and a camper. And then a separate fire was started back on July 20, also by a cat sparking something on a power pole. So even the cats are coming to get us. But during all of this, PGE customers have broken the records for power consumption and have used enough to power nearly four cities the size of Seattle. And so as temperatures soar to 105, how many people in the greater Portland area do you think, Mark, have air conditioning? And that's counting like you have right here, I think a window unit.
I would say 65%.
Close, 70%. I would never have guessed it was that many.
Hmm.
I would have thought it was way less living around here. But yeah, 70% of those who have air conditioning, which 30% do not. The customers broke the power records this week using the most power in a single hour since the summer of 2009. So they set the record of 3,967 megawatts of power and then broke that again on Thursday. And that is enough to power 3.5 cities the size of Seattle in 1 hour we used. And they kept the power grid up. I didn't really hear about any. I think Wilsonville went out for just a tiny bit, but that's not even connected to the rest of the city.
No,
but I did not hear any power outages or any problems with doing that. So, so if you're cranking the air conditioner this week and you want to keep track of your bills, you can go to the PGE website, of course. And if you are having a hard time paying it because you had to turn it on because of this heat, you can also go to the PGE website for payment assistance for things like that. So if you're listening to this and we're still in the heat wave, which I'm looking at my weather bar, which has had nothing but the icon of a thermometer on fire for the past week, and it's way through this Friday, it'll be at least 97 or above.
Ugh.
So if finances are keeping you from turning on your air conditioner, don't worry about that because there is resources for payment assistance for that. And speaking of that, TriMet is now offering reduced fares for low-income riders. And so that fee will be cut in half from $2.50 to $1.25. So individuals that make less than double the federal poverty level. So what do you think, Mark, is the federal poverty level?
It's higher than you would think. I think the federal poverty level is $28,000 a year.
The federal poverty level, excuse me, is $12,000 a year.
Oh, it's much lower than
it is. As someone who is single, living in a very small place, who doesn't have any extra expenses outside of like of electricity and stuff like that, I there's no way that anyone could make it on $12,000 a year. And that is unless you are above that, below that, you can't tap into a lot of the resources that you can. Cause I mean, when I lost all that work, I was not double the poverty rate. And it was impossible to make it without borrowing money from people.
Right. Wow.
And to think of a family or to think of people with kids. I mean, so anyway, So there is, if you still, so you can make twice that and still be eligible, and or a family of four with earnings up to $49,000. So you can get reduced fares for TriMet, which is awesome. So a couple more things real quick. Bitcoin, have you heard the controversy in Bitcoin?
Wasn't there some split?
There is a Bitcoin splits in two amid a feud in the Bitcoin world. So there are disagreements on how to operate the crypto currency, which they need a new name for because no one is going to put their faith in something that has crypto in the, unless you're a cryptozoologist following Bigfoot around. There's a new strand called Bitcoin Cash, which is breaking off from the Bitcoin system. So Bitcoin Cash launches Tuesday in what's known as a hard fork from Bitcoin, which is the virtual currency based on a peer-to-peer transaction. The new offshoot is responsible to increasing the popularity of Bitcoin, which is struggling to deal with the massive numbers of transactions. It apparently can't keep up with the technology. So the main Bitcoin the main Bitcoin currency is adopting a system, blah blah blah, that moves transactions out. So some of the technical divide, but so it remains to be seen what the schism will do to market values. But it just, I can't quite figure out that story. Other than it sounds like there's a strain on the old system, so there needs to be a new one
system.
Implemented. The traffic, I guess. I don't know.
I have nothing. I know.
So hopefully the listeners who care about that will know what that means so they can translate it for themselves. So one of my other favorite stories going around, all of the headlines this past week in science and NASA news talked about how NASA was hiring a protection of an extraterrestrial life alien protection officer.
Okay.
And so there is an actual job at for NASA for planetary protection officer, which still sounds kind of crazy, but it really is not, because it's just a person in charge of the avoidance of organic constituent or biological contamination now that we're going to be sending people and other things to different planets. So anything that could be on those machines or the suits when we get out there, it's basically just, you know, the decon station in the space movies where it's all that the air that decontaminates them or whatever. There will be a person in charge of that.
Yeah, I mean, you think about just a stray bacteria gets into water in the water supply in Mars or whatever.
So it, all the sensationalist headlines on that really cracked me up this week, but it's just a practical thing that is needed. And lastly, here's our water skiing squirrel story for the week. A Texas man shoots an armadillo, but the bullet ricochets back into his own face. An East Texas man was wounded after he fired a gun, at an armadillo in his yard, and the bullet ricocheted back and hit him in the face. Larry Rowe said the man, who was not identified, went outside his home in Marietta, southwest of Texarkana, around 3 a.m. on Thursday morning. He spotted the armadillo on his property and he opened fire. His wife was in the house. He went outside and took his .38 revolver and shot three times at the armadillo. The animal's hard shell deflected at least one of three bullets, which struck the man in the jaw. The man was airlifted to the nearby hospital where his jaw was wired shut. The status of the animal is unknown. We did not find the armadillo, the sheriff said. So have you ever seen an armadillo in real life?
I think maybe at a zoo.
At a zoo?
Yeah.
I remember going to Arkansas for the first time, and we were driving either through Oklahoma or Texas to get there. And it was at night, and we were making a U-turn in a tiny cul-de-sac because we were going the wrong way, and it was like in the middle of the night, and the lights of the car shined toward the end of the cul-de-sac, and there was a creature like running through the street, likes of which I had never seen in my life, and it was like bigger than a cat, small, like all, it was an armadillo, of course, which are just
aliens.
Yeah. They are just a round shell with a triangle pointed face and those weird, and to see it going by and locals there, of course, they're just all over, they're just pets, like, you know, raccoons are around here, and they said, like, if that, and my favorite tidbit for an armadillo is that their defense mechanism inexplicably is for them to jump about 2.5 feet straight up in the air, so that when you are driving a car and there is one on the highway and it gets scared, it jumps up just high enough for it to bowling ball smash into your grill and like really screw up your car. So yeah, they are just alien little crazy looking things. So
oh my word.
Before we go to, did you want to that is before or after Brian?
Let's do it right now.
Okay.
And so it'll be really confusing when Brian asks about it.
And then we tell him we haven't done it yet. But he just says good luck when you do it.
So Brian came over this weekend and brought us some new chips. And so we had, let's keep that one for last. Let's start with.
So these are Lay's
potato chips. So there's some new flavors out. And
are these flavors from America? Or are these gathered from?
Vote for your
flavor. Okay. So they do this every summer or every year, something like that. They have new flavors.
So we have fried green tomato.
Okay. Oh, those are wavy kind. Careful. Wavy. They're wavy.
They're wavy.
That's an old Simpsons joke, I think. When wavy fries got loose on these spoons.
Nope.
That was my computer. All right. So these are the fried green tomato wavy Lay's.
And those ones to me don't have a real strong.
They just kind of taste like ranch.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm not as familiar with the fried green tomatoes.
And so this one is an everything
bagel. This one is an
bagel.
Everything bagel with cream cheese.
With cream cheese.
And it is of note, I had a bagel with cream cheese before I came here. So I will be able to. All right, here we go. Huh. Ooh, the finish on that one is. So it tastes like a salted potato chip, but then for a second. I don't taste anything cream cheesy, though.
Yep. Okay, so this one has...
Oh, it really hurt my mouth on that one.
Chipped a tooth?
They're like... No, it went right into... You ever do that when you eat a Dorito triangle up and it like...
Oh, yeah.
Stabs through your navel cavity.
Right. Okay, so this one was the most interesting to me.
Oh, okay.
Because it is crispy taco and it includes everything that's in that photo... including the lettuce. So taste that and tell me about that.
I really hurt my mouth. There's a medley of flavors, but I can't quite.
Yeah, so in that one.
Oh, I taste the what must be cumin for the meat.
Right.
I'm like a sommelier over here.
Gotta oxygenate it.
I can smell a tomatoey. This must be fascinating to listen to. I can smell a tomatoey finish, but I don't know. Oh, and I can taste some of the shell. Oh, that's freaky though.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have picked it out of a lineup, but I think if you pay attention to it.
Yeah. It's got a lot going on in that one. And Brian and I both, we're like, there's lettuce in there. And I noticed
I can kind of taste. I can taste the lettuce now that I'm kind of done chewing on it for a while.
Right.
The after lettuce.
The after lettuce.
They call it. The nose that comes out
nose
after
lettuce.
Chewing. Oh, that is weird. I did notice that they must have started to synthesize a cheaper jalapeno flavor. Because I noticed there are a ton of products out there right now that are all jalapeno flavored.
Huh.
And usually when they're saying it happened with pomegranate a couple of years ago, they were able more cheaply synthesize it. And that's why everything became pomegranate flavored.
Hmm.
So they must have broken a breakthrough at the flavor factory for jalapeno. Well, I'm going to take us into the Unipipe or something a little different. So I work with kids, and this summer I have a new client and he likes to make music and stuff like that. And so I was asking about it and what he used, and he pulled out his, I forget what he even used. It wasn't an iPad. It was some sort of little music programmy thing. And so as we were driving to the Enchanted Forest, he wrote a song that reminded me a lot of our opening theme. And so it's 48 seconds long. So I don't know if he named it Broadcast or if that's just what it came up. But here's a little song by my buddy Eddie that we'll play into the Unipiper. We'll be right back.
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Brian. Is this Unipiper?
It is. Were you trying to sound like Todd, or were you? Is that just Mark?
No, it was just me.
Oh wow, that's weird. I am here, but I have not said anything yet. It sounded like me. I'll have to go back to the tape and listen.
No, it didn't sound like you. It sounded like Mark trying to sound like.
Oh, I see. A poor approximation.
Well, hi, Unipiper. Yeah. What's going on?
Todd, has Mark given you the treat that I left for you at his house yet?
No.
Oh.
He's looking confused, like he either forgot about it or perhaps ate it if it was a food item.
Are we talking about the three treats?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got them queued up for the show. We haven't recorded the show yet.
Oh,
okay. Is that what I asked about earlier?
Yes.
I asked if should I spoil it? It's three bags of chips clipped together that I thought Mark was just eating all of them before I came over. So I asked if the chips were for a scientific purpose, and he said yes. So we have not dug into them yet.
Okay, well, I won't spoil that. I will save the surprise for the rest of the audience for later in the show.
Okay.
Instead, we can talk about what's been going on in Portland this past week.
Cool. What's been going on?
Well, I don't know what's been going on, but here's something that's coming up this week. This week is the Portland Drive-In Movie Spectacular at the Portland Expo Center. If you've ever wanted to relive the glory days of drive-in movies, now you can do so right within Portland city limits in the parking lot of the Expo Center.
Are they just putting up a big screen of some sort?
They're essentially just putting up a big movie screen at the Expo Center, and you can park your car there, which is the thing that most people do at the Expo Center anyway, since it is mostly a giant parking lot. Starting on Wednesday, going all weekend long through Sunday, they're showing a different movie each night, and there's going to be fun and games and entertainment and stuff. And they're showing everything from The Shining to Raiders of the Lost Ark and Harry Potter, Grease, and Caddyshack.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
I have been to a drive-in once, and I technically had a nervous breakdown that night, but I don't like how late in the summer you have to wait for them to start. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gets dark really, really late here.
It's
like not until 10 that the movie starts, and it's usually a double feature. And
right.
Like to get parking, you have to get there at like 5. And I know everybody likes the kind of the camp out type, you know, tailgating experience, which I don't care for. But
the one that you went to, was it 99 West in Newburgh by any chance?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask about. I haven't actually been out there myself, but I do know that last year it was ranked by USA Today as the number one drive-in theater in the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty great. It's very, like...
Nervous
breakdowns aside. Yeah.
If that was unrelated to the theater, so I am not going to pin that on the theater.
We watched, I'm pretty sure it was Creature from the... Creature from Black Lagoon
oh, cool.
In 3D.
Oh wow, that's
the,
cool.
Yeah, blue, neat. The blue green, blue red blue glasses.
That's
and,
cool.
Yeah, was,
I think it, I saw Star Trek the original. Well, the original, the J.J. Abrams reboot of Star Trek is what I saw there. There was a second one, but we did not make it to the second one.
I have never watched an entire movie at a drive-in theater. Only fall asleep.
Yeah. Oh well. That I can see. Well, that's cool. So, and that's at the Expo Center then.
That's at the Expo Center. Yep. This past week, I did have the chance, Mark, since we talked about it last week, I went over and I visited Helen's Pacific Costumers.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a couple of pictures that you took over there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry that I hadn't gone sooner. It really is amazing. I went on one of the days during the heat wave, so it wasn't air conditioned inside.
No.
So it was a little bit claustrophobic, but holy crap, do they have a lot of costumes.
Wow.
And the people were in there, once they found out that I was the Unipiper and I was getting something for a Unipiper related project, they were just so excited.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and as soon as they launch their GoFundMe or Kickstarter or whatever they're going to do to save their costume collection, I will pass along the information and get it out there so people
excellent.
Raise as much money as they can. But I got part of a costume for the sun for an eclipse-related Unipiper project that is coming up.
Nice.
Can't wait to share with you guys.
Fantastic.
That's 2 weeks from today.
Holy crap.
Wow,
it is.
That's coming fast. I was just reading our friend Nate Heath. I just posted something on Facebook about how the forecast for at least probably the Portland area, I don't know how big it is, but it is just like heavy blankets of clouds and obscured views. So that'll be fun for a lot of people who are traveling to get here.
Wow. Well, speaking of the eclipse, I feel like we should have, Todd, do you have some sort of sound effect or music queued up? I feel like we need an Eclipse Watch 2017.
Oh, I do. Let's do...
I remember that Brian can't hear.
Yeah, Brian can't hear that, but I assure you it was hilarious. It was just our dramatic sound effect sting, so.
Oh, okay. Well, two eclipse-related stories that I came across today. Really interesting is people preparing for the eclipse in very different ways. Did you hear about the couple that has been preparing for the eclipse in Oregon for the past 40 years?
Oh, my gosh. What?
What?
They purchased land and built a home specifically in the path of the eclipse starting 40 years ago. They've been working on this house, and it's designed so like everybody will be on a deck. They've got a big window that goes all the way through the house, and it's supposed to line up like Stonehenge. And they built a 7-foot fully enclosed telescope on their deck. It is epic.
I did see, actually, now that you're mentioning that story go by on Facebook, and I saw a little picture of the outside of the house, but I didn't read the article. Wow, that is a long-term plan.
Yes. They missed the last eclipse, and then they promised they wouldn't miss this one.
And it clearly destroyed their lives in a way that they completely constructed a new identity around seeing the next eclipse.
And now it's going to be cloudy.
Oh my gosh! Wouldn't that?
Oh wow! Where did you say this was? I'm assuming this is in Central Oregon.
It's in Monmouth,
which is where by Independence. It's from where Greg
down by Liver Dallas,
Oregon. Yes. It's by Damascus. Are we just naming cities that are also in other states?
Boring.
Wow, that would be terrible if it was cloudy for them. I mean, for everyone, I guess, but just specifically for that life goal. The one thing they can't control.
The other funny the other related eclipse story deals with marijuana and the pot industry related to the eclipse tourism. There is a couple who have a pot shop, and they are trying to open a second one in Detroit, Oregon. A community that currently does not have a pot shop and is completely within the path of total eclipse. And they wanted to open it in time so they could take advantage of the pot tourism. But the rate at which the inspectors are going and giving permits, it sounds like they are not going to open in time. Yeah.
That's a shame.
It's a shame.
Although that seems like a more short-sighted plan, because yes. Like what happens the day after,
right? And then also that the story made it sound like, oh, we've been working on this plan for 4 months. It's like, well, geez, if you know, Tom and Betty can build a house and plan ahead 40 years. I guess they didn't quite know the pot was going to be legal by the next eclipse, but planning for over a year.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
It's really funny to see the way that people are trying to make money to take advantage of the eclipse. Like, you go into Fred Meyer's and there's just all of these eclipse T-shirts. Where were you?
I saw those today.
And
I also saw some more because, like, I had grabbed some of the eclipse glasses that look like the old 3D, you know, the paper 3D glasses or whatever. And I had grabbed, they had them at Safeway at the front thing. And I grabbed like 10 of them or something like that. Only to come to realize that now they're all in little boxes in Safeway marked $2.99 each. And so there was some sort of miscommunication either by the store who was just setting them out or by me who just grabbed them without paying. So I have a feeling the store had them set out and was like, wait a minute, what are you guys doing? And then started selling them for $2.99.
I can already envision them in the like 99-cent bin at Goodwill.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. A flood of all of those T-shirts and items and.
Where were you when you could buy cheap eclipse merchandise? I also saw a really interesting article today that made me think of Portland, and I'm curious to see if you guys, anything comes to mind, but it was people interviewed in different countries, and the number one thing that annoys people of those countries that tourists do in that
Ooh,
country.
Interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
Freedom
too hard.
In Germany, it was taking selfies at the Holocaust sites.
Yes.
In India, it was taking selfies in front of the slums where people live.
Oh my gosh!
Essentially, the list, of course, nowadays is just ways in which people embarrassingly take selfies, I guess.
Yeah.
But thinking about Portland, I was like, that's applying that to Portland. You know, what annoys us about tourists in Portland? And the one that came to my mind was downtown people driving in either the bus lane or the bike lane with their cars.
To be fair, it is almost impossible to drive successfully downtown without accidentally going down a one-way street the wrong way or getting that bus mall, especially for the people that lived here a long time. Like, that gets confusing when all of a sudden you're stranded in the middle of the road and, like, you're in a bus-only lane and, like, everyone's all angry with you. And
they're honking at you and you don't know why.
Yeah.
You want to do something, but you don't know what to do. I love watching that happen to tourists and the different way that people get up. My office downtown overlooks, it's right on 6th, which is one of those bus and trolley max streets, so I see it happen all day long, and it's humorous.
That's
to me.
So funny.
Yeah,
it's like watching when we're Mark. Do you remember at Koopman Ospo at our ad agency watching people parallel park?
Oh yeah,
right in front of, because we were right in front of the street or whatever, and so we'd watch people try to parallel park all day long. And just
it was also great there. My desk was right next to the window, and we're on the ground floor, right at the sidewalk level. Uh-huh. And our windows were kind of mirrored, and so we'd always get people stopping and picking their teeth and looking straight into my eyes and not knowing that they were, you know,
right, looking right
in
at
a
you.
Two-way mirror.
I can't do it if you're watching, Mark.
Exactly.
And lastly, because I love telling people where they can give money that is to causes other than our podcast, Space Taxi needs a new transmission, and you should go fund their Indiegogo page. Space Taxi, anyone? Space
no.
Taxi?
No.
No. You may have seen it around town. This is a 1997 Chevy Lumina that has been painted pink and covered in 300 squares of individual artwork, and it has a license plate that says Space Taxi. I've seen it around a couple
of
times.
Oh, wow. No, I've never seen that.
Uh-uh.
I've seen the one that has, like, the huge...
Like the bronze van?
Yeah, that one. The other one that has, like, all statues on it or whatever. That's always by Saturday Market.
That's car.
That's whose car?
Extremo the Clown.
Yes.
Oh, I worked with his wife for a while. Ms. Extremo the Clown, I guess. I never did meet him.
Ms. The Clown.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Space Taxi is in need of a new transmission, and they are 73% there on their Indiegogo campaign. So if you would like to continue to see Space Taxi drive around Portland, and God knows we need more cars that look like that in Portland. Yes, we do. You can go and contribute. And if you donate $150, Space Taxi could be yours for a Saturday night. Just imagine.
Oh, wow.
What you could do in Portland driving around.
Is the story of Space Taxi just that it's the car looks funny, or is it like... Something
more of a,
goofy happens when it gets there or something.
No, it's more of a community thing. Like when they first painted it, they subdivided the car into 300 different panels and had different people decorate each one.
Oh, okay.
So it has a very, personal tie to the community and all the different people that have a connection. Oh, I did that square and yada, yada.
Right.
So,
interesting. Yeah.
Space Taxi.
Very cool.
Awesome. If people want to learn more about the Unipiper, where do they go?
They could come to my house, but I wouldn't recommend it. Instead, they should just find me online, unipiper.com, Facebook, Unipiper, Instagram, yada, yada, yada.
I did have a friend that I was talking to say, oh, I saw your friend, the Unipiper on TV without his mask on. I had never seen that. And I was like, oh, did you see the part where he said my name and they showed our website? She's like, no. I was like, how? All right. Well, whatever. So at least they saw you and were
they
all
were
excited.
Distracted
by the beauty. Right.
Anyway, well, awesome. We will talk to you next week when we'll be doing Portland at the Movies together.
I can't wait.
All right. We'll see you later, Brian.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, and then it ends. And then our car trip is over. Anyway, apparently we were raving on the way to Enchanted Forest. But thanks to Eddie for that. That was really. And then I paid him 50 cents for the music rights, and
awesome.
That was his first music sale. So today I wanted to talk about Lizzie Borden. For some reason, I came across an article about her, and I think there must be a new movie or a new TV show coming out or something about the case. And I, outside of the nursery rhyme, I don't really know anything about Lizzie Borden. Do you even know the little nursery rhyme? Do you even know who Lizzie Borden is?
Nothing.
You have never heard the name Lizzie Borden?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No,
well,
I don't know.
That'll be a first?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, there's an old nursery rhyme that usually... Wow, the roof of my mouth is just all foobar from that. It was like a
raw.
Weird folded over kettle chip. And so like as it had folded over, it had like quadrupled in strength. Should we do that a second?
We might. I don't know.
Okay, we'll do that. Mark just held up. He found a new attachment for his microscope that he got, and it's like a little dental tool mirror. And so we were looking at the backs of our teeth earlier today. So I'm totally going to use that to look at the ravaged top of my mouth, which looks like the top of a cat mouth with all those little ridges in it. Anyway, so there is a Lizzie Borden is a famous character and in history. She's a real life person. And there's a nursery rhyme that was one of those like kind of you would say it while jumping rope. And it was Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41 or something similar to that. There's a few variations on it. So Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. And so it is about a story of a girl who was accused of murdering her two parents with an axe, in 1892. It's a real story. You can go to Lizzie Borden House now. It's a huge thing because it ended up being unsolved. She was acquitted. She was acquitted of the murder. So technically, the murder is still unsolved. But it's been a couple different movies. It's been referenced on The Simpsons. I mean, Lizzie Borden is everywhere apparently, except if you've been Mark and have never heard about it before. I'll give you.
Did you say what year that was?
She was born in 1960. The murder took place, let me see if I can quick find it my notes, since this is not in order. I want to say 1893, excuse me.
Got it.
Oh, wait, that's when the trial started. So, I don't know, like 1892 or something
92
like that.
Was the, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, Lizzie Borden was born on July 19 in 1860 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Her mom died when she was three, and her father married this lady named Abby Gray, who Lizzie eventually thought out was just after her father for his money. The father, Andrew Borden, grew up modestly, but eventually he prospered in manufacturing of furniture and caskets, and then went on to become a property owner, textile mills, all that stuff. And he at the time of his death, he was worth the equivalent of today's $8 million. But despite, I love these little facts that even though he was super rich, he was totally a spendthrift and a cheapskate, and his house didn't even have plumbing on one of the floors, even though he lived in like the biggest house in all the land. It must have been built without it, and then he didn't retrofit it. And so all those little things. So Lizzie had one older sister named Emma, and they both were raised really religious. They were involved in the church. She was a Sunday school teacher, did all those things. In the couple months leading up to the murders, so this, like I said, the murders took place on August 4. So we're in August 7 right now. So August 4, 1892 was when the murder. So a couple months before this, some tension in the house. started to grow because Lizzie Borden's dad started giving property and other gifts of money to the stepmom's family. And since they were already concerned that the stepmom was just in it for the money, there was all of this tension starting to brew. And the night before the murders, their uncle on their mom's side, John Morse, was visiting and invited to stay a few days. He was talking some business with the dad. And so on the morning of Thursday, August 4, 1892, between 9 o'clock and 10:30, the mother was found dead in her room. So according to the forensic investigation, which also was kind of a new thing coming at that time, this is also the time that Sherlock Holmes was being written and all of these things about looking at the details and looking at crime. Right. That was like all the rage then. So according to the forensic investigation, Abby, which is a stepmom, was facing her killer at the time of the attack. She was first struck on the side of a head with a hatchet, which cut her above the ear, causing her to turn and fall face down. Her killer then struck her multiple times, delivering 17 direct hits to the back of her head until she was dead. So after breakfast, the dad, Andrew, and the uncle were sitting in their room, and they were chatting about business and blah, blah, blah. The uncle leaves to go on a walk at 8:48, and the dad was left at home. The dad ran a little errand and came back at 10:30, and his key wouldn't open the door, so he knocked. They had a maid named Bridget who went to unlock the door, and she couldn't open it. And she, the maid, would later testify that when they couldn't get open the door, she heard some laughing or giggling from upstairs. But at the time, she didn't see Lizzie, but she kind of heard, felt like she was around. And that was considered significant because the mom's body would have been visible to where Lizzie would have been. And Lizzie claims to, you know, have discovered it later. So that kind of came into play later. So then the dad eventually comes in and lays on the couch. And so this is where things kind of get into a little dispute, because Lizzie denied being upstairs and testified that when her father asked where the stepmom was, then Lizzie stated that she removed the dad's boots, Andrew's boots, and helped him into slippers before he lay down on the sofa for a nap. There are death photos of the dad. He was killed on that couch or on that sofa, but he was wearing his shoes. So that part wasn't true and oddly specific. Next she informed, and see, and this is strange. So she says she laid the dad down for a nap, helped him to slippers, and then Lizzie said that she was going to go to this department store sale, and so she disappears. And then she gives two different accounts, because she said that she also went into the barn, either looking to do some ironing or to fix a door or did something for about 20. She said she ate pears for 20 to 30 minutes. The police were skeptical, saying that it was like there was a stifling heat wave and the loft in the barn would have been like super hot to just hang out eating pears for a half hour. The maid testified that at this time, the maid was in her third floor room because she was violently ill from the whole family at that time was kind of sick from some old lamb that had been sitting out, which apparently they just added to all their food because they were all sick. But the maid was sick and went upstairs. And at 11:10, she heard Lizzie calling from downstairs, "Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Someone came in and killed him." And then it says parenthetically, "Lizzie always called Bridget, who was the maid, Maggie, the name of an earlier maid." So rich people are always jerks. "I will call you by the old maid. I do not care to learn a new name."
"You are Maggie."
"You are Maggie forever." So Andrew was slumped on the couch in the sitting room. He was struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet like weapon. There is something with his eyeball that's disgusting that I won't read. But he was still bleeding, which suggested obviously quite recent attack. So that's what happened to the mom and the dad. So obviously there's an investigation. Her answers to police were kind of strange and contradictory. She said she heard a groan or scraping or distress, but then later she said she didn't hear anything and blah, blah, blah. When she asked where
if she knew where her stepmom was. Abby said she thought she was out of friends and like all this stuff. So it kept changing. The police said that she had this kind of a bad attitude about it, but she was also on morphine that the doctors gave her, you know, obviously through a traumatic event at that time. It was either cocaine or morphine that they were just handing out. So she was kind of giving weird answers for that. But the police also didn't bother to check or inspect her room. They didn't inspect her clothing. They didn't take really any forensic evidence from around the house right off the bat. In the basement, they found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head that had a broken handle. The hatchet head was suspected to be the murder weapon, as the break in the handle appeared fresh, and the ash and dust on the head, it looked like somebody had tried to like apply it afterwards to match all the other ones that had been sitting in the basement for a long time. Okay. And that got all dusty. So there was weird dust kind of just put on it to make it look like it. But none of those tools were removed from the house and brought to the police station. And later that night, a police officer said she saw Lizzie enter the basement and bend over pails containing her parents' bloody clothes, an action which was never. So she was washing those clothes. And later, I believe the next morning, Lizzie was burning clothes and said, "Oh, I got paint on them." And so none of that evidence was collected. And so on August 6th, which is 2 days after, police conducted a more thorough search of the house, inspecting the sister's clothing finally, and then confiscating the broken-handled hatchet head. That evening, the police officer and the mayor visited the Bordens, and Lizzie was informed that she was the suspect. The next morning, Alice Russell, who I don't know who that is, entered the kitchen to find Lizzie Borden tearing up a dress, and she explained she was putting it in the fire because it was covered with paint. And so no one ever didn't know if those were the clothes or what. On August 8th, Lizzie was brought in. Her request to have her attorney present was refused for some reason. And this is where she was prescribed regular doses of morphine. Her behavior was erratic and she contradicted herself, like I said. She was finally served the warrant and arrested. And then she gets to a trial. So this is happening at a time when there was a bigger movement of sensationalistic journalism. It's a wealthy family.
Fake news.
It's fake news. Yeah, it's the rise of fake news. And because usually women in this situation at that time, obviously they were considered, if women were killing other people, it was always through poison. And that was kind of the norm at the time. And even actually Lizzie Borden tried to buy poison the night, like the day before, and that didn't come out until much later. But because it was obviously such a gruesome and brutal crime of strength and just terrible, it was like a huge sensation, obviously. So the hatchet head found in the basement was not convincingly shown to be the murder weapon. So these are kind of some of the details of the trial. Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed the handle because it was bloody. An officer testified that the hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, blah, blah, blah. There was no bloody clothing found. Evidence was excluded that Lizzie had sought to purchase prussic acid, which is for cleaning a cloak, she said, at the drug the day before. So that evidence was excluded. There was that mystery illness that was going through the house, that everyone was sick. They were all tested for poison. None of the poison was found. Now, listen to this detail. The victims' heads were removed during the autopsy, and the skulls were used as evidence during the trial. And so, of course, Lizzie fainted upon seeing that, as I think any normal human being in that situation would be. So that was sensational headlines, too. And there's all these great, like, woodcut carving drawings of, like, her swooning in her big Victorian dress, which is pretty great. So on June 20, after deliberating an hour and a half, the jury acquitted Lizzie. No one else was ever charged, and the murders continue to be unsolved. There's obviously a couple of theories. Most people think it was Lizzie herself. Some people think it was the maid. And there's just a couple other random people. The sister was out of town at the time. Some people said that she snuck back or whatever, but because there was no physical evidence to tie anyone to the crime, they couldn't charge anyone else. So she gets acquitted. She moved into a bigger house in kind of a better section of town. She changed her name to Lisbeth, A. Borden, so that really didn't change a whole lot. But because the stepmom died before the dad, according to the evidence, all of the stepmom's belongings get willed to the dad, which then gets willed to her and her sister. So they did end up with a considerable amount of the estate. They did give some of it to the stepmom's family because there was obviously some fighting there, but it mostly went to them. She was ostracized from the society. She was accused of shoplifting again in 1897, so that just put it all back in the papers again. In 1905, and I don't know the story, it sounds fascinating, but after an argument that Lizzie had with her sister about a party that she had given for an actress called Nance O'Neill, Emma, the sister, moved out of the house and they never spoke again. So there was some party involving some actress named Nance O'Neill that destroyed the sister's relationships. So in her last year of life, she had her gallbladder removed. She was ill and she died of pneumonia on June 1, 1927. 9 days later, her sister died in New Hampshire. The sisters never married, and then they were buried with their parents. Lizzie left an equivalent of $555,000 to the Fall River Animal Rescue League and about $9,000 in today's money to keep up her father's grave, and then some other money. But that is kind of the base of the story. And like I said, I'm kind of surprised that you haven't just heard it in passing
I probably have. I was looking up the Chelsea Heath, Nate's wife, mm-hmm. was referenced the movie from Christina Ricci.
Yeah, so I was looking up and Christina Ricci showed up in the You May Be Searching For It. It was like a bunch of like serial killers and terrible people, right. And Christina Ricci, and I'm like, what in the world? But yeah, she was, right.
And there's Lizzie Borden took an axe,
yeah.
And then Nate says, I think this is the story that the show Making a Murderer was based on.
Oh, yeah, so, totally. And it was that same. I mean, it was obviously like really sensationalistic, and they were wealthy, and right. It was a woman, and it was all this stuff, and so it was like. The trial of it was like the OJ of their time because it played into the wealth and fame and murder and all that stuff. There's a new book out. I think there's a really well reviewed, at least new book out about, and it's kind of a fictionalized story of Lizzie Borden, but the author of the book was like obsessed with it and like has researched for the last 20 years and like visited all these people. And she, worked that into her story or whatever. But I think that's why I came across that name. So that's a popular book out right now. And I finally decided to look it up. So
that's awesome. So I gave a link at the bottom of the document. The other document is the nursery rhyme.
Oh, the actual. Oh, yeah. Let's click on that because I also found a song from 19.
You can take us out with.
We'll play that in a second. But I also found a folk singing trio who had a hit in 1962 called Lizzie Borden that I'll play. So let's play this one first.
I haven't screened this.
Brother.
Never mind.
Oh, that's for. That's. Viral marketing for a movie called Lizzie in 2013. But I think there's another movie coming up. But yeah, so that's kind of the long and short of Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41, which wasn't even true. It was like 11 and 19, but I guess those don't rhyme. So yeah.
Wow.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. Next week, we will be here with Brian, not doing the Mark and Toddcast, but doing Portland at the Movies. Our movie next week is called Portland Exposé, and it was made in 1957.
Dun, dun, dun.
And is a film noir, it's a fascinating movie, and it's got a lot of cool vintage Portland spots that we've been able to find. So tune into that. Do you have anything else of note,
nope.
Mark, coming up? All right, well, then I will play you the Lizzie Borden song from the Chad Mitchell Trio, a huge hit in 1962. We'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye.
And gave her mother 40 whacks.
Apparently hilarious.
And when the job was nicely done, she gave her father 41. Yesterday in Old Fall River, Mr. Andrew Borden died, and he got his daughter Lizzie on a charge of homicide. Some folks say she didn't do it, and others say of course she did. They all agree Miss Lizzie B was a problem kind of kid. Cause you can't chop your papa up in Massachusetts, not even if it's planned as a surprise.
A surprise!
No, you can't chop your papa up in Massachusetts. You know how neighbors love to criticize. Sofa where he'd gone to take a snooze, and I hope he went to heaven, cause he wasn't wearing shoes. Lizzie kindly rearranged him with a hatchet, so they say. Then she got her mother in that same old-fashioned way. But you can't stop your mama up in Massachusetts, not even if you're tired of her cuisine. Her cuisine, no, you can't stop your mama up in Massachusetts, and no, it's almost sure to cause a scene. Well, they really kept her hopping on that busy afternoon, with both down and upstairs chopping while she hummed a ragtime tune. They really made her hustle, and when all was said and done, she'd removed her mother's bustle when she wasn't wearing one. Oh, you can't chop your mama a bit.
Oh, a good old bustle joke. There's a video of them singing it in the actual Lizzie Borden house, too.
Wow.
Anyway, we'll see you guys next time.
All right. Bye-bye.